These were your responses to the first, after the first night we did the groups. I asked your impressions and how it could be improved. Everyone seemed to like it, and there were many suggestions for improving it too. Using this method, I hope I can become more absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. I would like to continue to read like this and really be able to enter one day into the sublime pastimes of our wonderful Lord Krishna. Thank you for teaching us Sat Sangha, Saru Sangha. But one of the things I wanted to do was to break the image that Saru Sangha can only take place when everybody listens to one highly positioned speaker, but that using Prabhupada's book and staying close to the pastimes of Krishna, all devotees can engage in that, not be only passive. So here's some criticism of how it was actually conducted. Gaudi said, the group was disorganized, there was no leader, two people speaking at the same time, and hard to hear because of the different groups being so close to each other. Some of these things we can't do much about, some we can improve. I'd rather keep it in this one room. I think by the time half of you went out and went to the other room, I think the mood might be disturbed of immediately speaking after the pastime. And there weren't too many complaints about that, about the noise of the other groups. The one way, I'm not sure if we need a leader per se, but there could be a kind of a moderator, a person who just sees that things, like a chairman, to see that it goes all right. When I was doing the groups over the summer, I performed that function. And another thing is that I think that a suggestion that several made, which I would like to implement, and that is that you speak, go around, you could say clockwise, and start with some person, and then the next person speak in order, rather than just the person who speaks first. We may feel that what we have to say is very important, but and the other person may be shy, but just give everyone a chance in order. I think that will be good. I can see this exercise is going to be a source of entertainment on the one hand and a serious attempt at broadening our feelings for Krishna. And someone said, I think it best to go clockwise around the members of the group, giving everyone a chance to speak. More time given to the sessions. It's a good sign, but I don't think we can expand it so much more. Maybe if we get efficient with covering all the other material, we can do more than one, or maybe extend it. Or at least for now. Yeah, sure. It should be like an hour. On the other hand, some devotees, they want me to speak more. So, anyway, I'm keeping all these things in mind as we go along. Maybe more than we can adapt. Someone says, it's good to not get too open, otherwise respect gets lost. Therefore, we should always have the teacher make a formal talk more often than the group system. 15-minute group session every day, rest of the time lecturing. I took notes because I like to review the discussions in the class. Took notes of what was going on in the group, someone did. I think this might have been Jai Gurupad. He says, It was very interesting and fun. We can visualize the story nicely and can share our realization. Soon we will like to help each other and not fight. Is that yours? I guess. And his suggestions, keep some lamps or lights there so if the electricity goes off, we can use them. The teams should write down their realizations and later read them out to the entire class. Several ladies said that they liked to talk about Krishna, and so they were glad to do it in a smaller company of other women. Rotate again in turns so everyone has a chance. I felt somewhat intimidated by thoughts such as, how can I say anything? It may just nurture my puffed up tendencies towards speculation. Similar thoughts hampered my appreciation of other devotees. So that one thing that we could introduce to our groups is to periodically suggest how you think it's going and how the speakers might improve without being personally critical of one another. You can just evaluate your own sessions. It's the first time in 14 years that I heard so much Krishna Katha going on all at once. Rupa Goswami wished to have millions of mouths to glorify Krishna. Devotees need and want to speak about Krishna. They have realizations, no doubt about it. These sessions bring the best out of everyone's Krishna consciousness. This is what Krishna wants us to do forever. Mat chitta mat gata prana. I was able to open in the group session, which reminds me of some group therapy for making friends and getting to know each other better. But here the difference is that we learn to know Krishna more. Better attitude towards other devotees. Appreciation that the devotees had such realizations. So on. If you have more ideas about the class and or the groups, you can give me a note just about that. Before we do a group session, I want to talk about several points, particularly the chapter that we just began. It's called Killing a Bhagasura. But we read, or we heard rather, Prabhupada describing how the boys run in the woods and play. So in the Bhagavatam, the phrase is used, asankhyatai, unlimited. Sankhya means to count, and they cannot be counted. This word is used for all the calves and cows and boys. Krishna left in the morning with unlimited cows and calves and boys. So the materialistic mind wants to know, how can there be unlimited calves? Where is the space to fit them all in? And Prabhupada addresses this doubt. And this is like so many doubts. I remember some disciples of Prabhupada very offensively approaching him and saying that according to the population of the Yadu dynasty, there are so many billions of people, where could they fit? And asking all very mundane questions, so that you can take off on anything like that in the Krishna Bhakti, doubting how these things can be done. We should not consider, Prabhupada writes, we should not consider the statements of this verse to be mythological. They are factual but inconceivable. Krishna can accommodate an unlimited number of calves and an unlimited measurement of space. This is neither mythological nor false. But if we study Krishna's potency with our limited knowledge, that potency will never be able to understand. So in the Brihad Bhagavatamata, Sanatana Goswami states that since everything about Krishna is unlimited, nothing is impossible for him. In general, the problem is material concepts imposed upon Krishna's unlimited pastimes. The Absolute is unlimited, And in his human-like pastimes, he don't expect him to do things that confine to anything within the material world of the senses. He's achintya. It doesn't have to conform to science, human morality, or human dealings, our concept of fallibility, and so on. It's Krishna Leela, achintya shakti. To give us a basic idea of achintya shakti, Prabhupada has explained how even in nature there are so many things that we can't understand within our own bodies, or the planets and the stars. This is all being controlled by the inconceivable power of God. So, being so unlimited, when he comes here and does a little thing, relatively tiny display, compared to the displays he does in nature, such as lifting a small hill, Govardhan, or marrying a small number of women, 16,000, it's not impossible for God. Prabhupada used to decry the religionists who have only a vague idea of God. And he would say that we know everything about God. We know his name, his address, and his parents, and his home, and everything. So, with that, when they only have a vague idea of God, they don't have to face that all the individual particulars of the absolute truth. But we have these things. However, we should also understand that they're not ordinary. And this brings up another point I like to make. It's different than this non-devotee atheistic doubt that these activities are true. And this is a kind of negligence, we could call it, or superficiality that devotees will have. They may be not having doubts that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they don't think about Krishna deeply and don't hear about Krishna regularly. So they have a negligent attitude towards the Krishna book or the Leela of Krishna. And you can notice this in the way we sometimes may talk about Krishna. Like it's our religion. We accept it as our religion, but we don't invest our feelings and our thinking, feelings to do the kind of readings we're doing regularly, and thinking to read Prabhupada and what the acharyas have to say about it, then it falls into, it's a kind of a myth in a sense. It's a myth you believe in, rather than a myth you don't believe in. It's just the Krishna stories, and we think that they're just things that we tell our children to amuse them. But they're the sacred life breath of developing our relationship with Krishna. Not to be treated sacredly in a manner that is closed in the book and we never read it. We have access to it, but it has to be worshipful. Somewhat connected to this, I wanted to mention and read a little statement I wrote about dramatic skits of Krishna Leela based on the Krishna book. And then I'll open this for any question or comment about this. I remember watching a skit produced by Gurukul children in which the Agasura demon was constructed from big cardboard boxes covered with cloth. The skit was filled with laughter, as is typical with amateur actors and children who make mistakes on stage. After the children climbed into Agasura, and before Lord Krishna had a chance to perform his act, the box collapsed and fell over, and the children emerged. It didn't seem wrong to perform this skit, even so childishly. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes enjoy the amateur skits of Krishna Leela done by his disciples, as long as the depictions and words were not concocted. He once advised that Gurukul children should be allowed and guided by their teachers to play out Krishna Leela in their free playtime. And Krishna himself would play in this way, enacting the pastimes of Ramchandra as part of his boyish sport. The children's skits for the public or private play seem harmless, even when when a child playing Krishna is embarrassed by his blue stage paint or forgets his lines or starts to cry. But when adults perform the dramas, we're sometimes disturbed when a farcical Narada, that's the phrase Prabhupada uses, that's a great phrase, meaning that the actor himself, he, you know, smokes cigarettes and so on, he's a farcical Narada. When a farcical Narada appears, or a Krishna with a lady's wig who forgets his lines and wears track shoes and socks on the stage. In any event, good fun and comedy should not obstruct the reality of the Leela or make us think, for example, that Agasura is actually nothing more than cardboard boxes. Does anyone have any question or comment about that? It's sort of related to my comment about how even the believers can be negligent or even offensive in Krishna Leela, but we have some freedom to live with it also. Anybody?
We used to have the fight in one of the early Scotchmen, his name Josh Hill, we used to fight Mahavishnu or Vishnu. And everybody would laugh as soon as he came on the stage because speaking his Scotch accent was not quite the way that one would envision the Vishnu. But after the initial humorous introduction, then usually he would get down to business and then everybody would take it very seriously. So there may be some humour, but at least the main purpose of the events would go on and move with their carrying.
The play, although there may be some laughter, even there's laughter just because we know him. Oh, there's Bhakta Bob, he's so and so. But the actors should take it seriously and really meditate on their parts, and then it comes across their sincerity. And for them especially, it can be very intense meditation. Yeah, there's one lecture you hear in Bombay also. Prabhupada begins to lecture after play and he says, I thank you very much for this performance, and I especially want to thank Mr. Hiranyakashipu. The devotees laugh, and Prabhupada says something like, oh, very good, thank you very much. So he said that he saw a play in Brooklyn Temple of Rukmini and Krishna, and he said, this is better than the book. Related comment about Krishna art. Sometimes the Makanchur Leela, the stealing of the butter, is depicted in popular bhajans and calendar art in a way that seems sentimental. I have two questions. One is, what makes it sentimental? And is it sometimes our fault to see it as sentimental? Maybe you can ask our artist friend. Do you ever see any pictures that you think are sentimental, and what makes you think they're sentimental? Archibald?
I would say sometimes the style of the
feet. But what is that style?
Sometimes they use a kind of Italian style.
Tends to be
sweet.
Yeah, saccharine, too sweet. Yeah. At worst, it looks like the cinema art, like the. And the artist himself, they could even be just a plain commercial mentality in there, what will sell. The artist may not be so talented, but especially he doesn't have any bhava or deep appreciation for Krishna, and just giving what the public wants. It definitely is something. There is such a thing as a cheap or inferior representation of Krishna. So he deserves the very best treatment, which can only be done by the best devotee artists. But is it sometimes our fault to see it that way?
I wanted to say a lot of members also with the cultural background, because especially for us Westerners, if we look at like paintings like that one, many would say it looks like kitsch. It's because of our Western, you know, background. Whereas if you ask, you know, Indian devotees,
could you define that so people may not know what you mean by
kitsch? And it's like oversweet. It's like, you know, but besides whether the painter follows the scripture or not, which is one criteria. A lot, you know, matters with the cultural background and the upbringing of the whole, like, cultural surrounding.
You mean that he should be painted differently according to the culture?
No, what I mean is it's very relative, because let's say most of our Western devotees like our Italian style of painting, but some of the Indians might, you know, think it's too European. Mm-hmm. Whereas we look at the typically Indian, like, overly sweet painted pictures, we think they look like kitsch, like Victorian style, whereas the Indians are maybe more used to that.
Yeah.
It's very
cultural difference.
Cultural background.
That's a different point. Yeah. It's undeniable that, and not necessarily a bad thing, that Krishna consciousness does have a flavor of its own in different cultures, not only in art but in prasadam cooking and singing and so on. So. You can say, well, it's not true, but it will come about, I guess, that there will be cultural differences in painting, too. Yes?
Baba Ashwini was very particular to install deities in particular feature that would fit particular
culture. As far as this point about the fault, there's that one incident where the devotee bought some Vrijabasi posters and in San Francisco, early days with Prabhupada, and they were looking at them, and the devotee said, Prabhupada, these paintings seem rather garish, I mean, like vulgar, too flashy in the colors. And Prabhupada said something like, a devotee sees Krishna, he's not concerned with the art. So that's like a transcendental way. If the form of Krishna is there, and done by a devotee, then we can worship it. Don't be too particular about it. That's one view he made. So it is sometimes our fault. You can get really into a nitpicking attitude. I don't like the crown. I don't like this. I don't like that. And it's too mundane. You should just appreciate the beauty of Krishna. In any case, even the best artist in this world is not going to be able to capture the beauty of Krishna. We have to see the beauties in the eye of the beholder with Krishna also.
That's why I said, you know, like, besides that one criteria, whether the artist followed the scriptures,
yeah.
There's another criteria where we have to learn in general to be more, like, tolerant or open-minded, not so much hung up with our own personal background and personal taste,
uh-huh.
Because that might not at all, you know, relate or apply to others in terms of taste of prasadam, taste of the outfits, taste of painting style.
You
have to be very kind of
yeah.
Careful not to be.
So that's the preachers, the intelligence of preachers in presenting these things. All right, these are just some general topics about Krishna book. Now, just after the section that Prabhupada spoke, where the boys are playing and they shouting ill names into the well and so on. Then there comes a famous verse, which is more philosophical, describing what is going on with these boys playing. Itam sitam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena maya svitanam naradarakena sakam vijaru kritta punya punja. In this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for jnanis, desiring to merge into that effulgence. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead for devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship, and who for ordinary persons is but another ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? So after the description, which seemed very much just like boys, even down to details, universal details like throwing a lunch bag around and everything that boys do in every culture. Now we're reminded these are not ordinary boys. They were their play leader is worshipped by some as Brahman, as some as the Supreme Master, and actually the boys were very, very fortunate. Krita Punya Punya, they must have accumulated heaps and volumes of pious activities. So I have a question about this for you. What about prior austerities and pious activities that they're required? In other places in the Shastras, we hear that these are not requirements, piety or tapasya for devotional service. So why is it mentioned that the cowherd boys attain this position only after many lifetimes of pious activities? Yes?
We're putting this only after the material pious activities that can be done.
Devotional service. That's a good explanation.
In one place there's a phrase, great pious activities such as Shravan and Kirtan.
Yeah, well, Shunya, Punya Shravana Kirtana. That line means that these are pious activities. Shunvatan Svakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana. It's Punya.
We will be discussing this at some length in the nectar of devotion today.
Oh.
And I know it's there in the Dhruva Kadambini, or the discussion is based really on the description of the Dhruva Kadambini. That it's something which is material, like helping an old lady cross a road or some sort of pious activity. Seeing it as material, it's in the material sphere, it can't have any consequences outside of the material sphere or in the spiritual realm. So when we hear of pious activities, as in this case, it can only mean some sort of agyata sukriti, unknowing devotional or Krishna conscious activity, or particularly some sort of service to a pure devotee performed unconsciously.
And consciously also?
Then would be agyata.
But agyata sukrita, but the other devotees in their comments, they've been saying there is such a thing as pious activity that has to be accumulated life after life. That would be you attempt to practice pure devotional service in this lifetime. When it's not perfect, you may come back again. It may take many lifetimes of pure devotional service, but you're mixed. Of course, if it was actually pure devotional service, you would immediately go to Krishna. But you're trying to perform pure devotional service, but you cannot complete it. And often we hear statements that I may have to take many, many lives, but let me at least live with the devotees, and gradually, and Prabhupada would say, gradually, when you're perfect, then you can go back to Godhead. So, yeah, well, you've all said, made the same point about the difference between material and spiritual piety, if you like. And certainly Krishna consciousness is pious. And also the point is that those boys or any eternal associates who are with Krishna, some are in the category of Nitya Siddha, who are always with Krishna, and some attained it by practicing sadhana. So we can understand this verse, Krita Punya Punya, is that why it doesn't mean material piety. Yes.
Would that verse refer to those Nitya Siddha devotees? Or the
well, it wouldn't refer to them because it says the cowherd boys having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives. All right, let's move on and go into the group formation. And then we'll have a reading of Agasura. So you can do that now. Go into the seven groups. Anyone doesn't remember what group they're in, let them know. Do we have a lamp in case it goes out?
I just have a small
flash. I got a bigger one. Oh, he's got the good.
If you wish, Ram Roy is going to read. If you wish to follow, I only have the classics version. It's on page 109. And after that one by Prabhupada ended, Ill Names and Laugh, then you go one, two, three paragraphs later, and it begins, Aghasura, thus deciding to kill all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, expanded himself. That's where we're going to start from. But you remember in the beginning, I didn't so much emphasize reading the book, but some devotees wanted to. It's fine to read, but don't make it just, don't get too absorbed just in the intellectual mechanics of reading, like in study, and retaining only in the mental images. But if you're going to read, let it enhance your hearing on all the levels. And noticing how your body even reacts, if you're fortunate enough to get a bodily reaction, and how your feelings react, and even what memory may be evoked. These are fortunate responses. And then intellect, of course, too. What associations it brings up in your mind to other spiritual teachings. One devotee remarked in their evaluation of the groups that the groups only seemed to respond on the one level of talking about the pastimes. No one yet was opening up so much to personal application of the lessons and so on. So that's another level. How this makes you think about your own devotional service or your lack of it. Well, these are some suggestions, but just don't try to follow them exactly. I'm just reminding you. Just let it happen. So we have to be receptive. After having done it a few times now, I would think that the distractions should be more under our control. We know pretty much what to expect when noises and lights and things that are going to happen, and we can put up with the inconvenience. It's a little warm, it's a little crowded, and so on. But just try to be receptive and pray to Krishna to please let me hear nicely this time and build up my appreciation so more and more I can learn to practice the art of hearing the Krishna book and then speaking my spontaneous responses. All right, begin.
Aghasura, thus deciding to kill all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, expanded himself by the yogic city called Mandima. The demons are generally expert in achieving almost all kinds of mystic powers. In the yoga system, by the perfection called Mandima City, one can expand himself as he desires. The demon Aghasura expanded himself up to 8 miles and assumed the shape of a very fat serpent. Having attained this wonderful body, he stretched his mouth open just like a mountain cave, desiring to swallow all the boys at once, including Krishna and Balaram. He sat on the path. The demon, in the shape of a big fat serpent, expanded his lips from land to sky. His lower lip was touching the ground, and his upper lip was touching the clouds. His jaws appeared like a big mountain cave without limitation, and his teeth appeared just like mountain summits. His tongue appeared to be a broad traffic way, and he was breathing just like a hurricane. The fire of his eyes was blazing. At first, the boys thought that the demon was a statue, but after examining it, they saw that it was more like a big serpent lying down in the road and widening his mouth. The boys began to talk among themselves. This figure appears to be a great animal, and he is sitting in such a posture just to swallow us all. Just see, it is not a big snake. Is it not a big snake that has widened his mouth to eat all of us? One of them said, yes, what you say is true. This animal's upper lip appears to be just like the sunshine, and its lower lip is just like the reflection of red sunshine on the ground. Dear friends, just look to the right and left-hand side of the mouth of the animal. Its mouth appears to be like a big mountain cave, and its height cannot be estimated. The chin is also raised just like a mountain summit. That long highway appears to be its tongue, and inside the mouth, it is as dark as in a mountain cave. The hot wind that is blowing like a hurricane is his breathing. And the fishy bad smell coming out from his mouth is the smell of his intestines. Then they further consulted among themselves. If we all at one time entered into the mouth of this great serpent, how could it possibly swallow all of us? And even if it were to swallow all of us at once, it could not swallow Krishna. Krishna will immediately kill him, as he did Bakasura. Talking in this way, all the boys looked at the beautiful lotus-like face of Krishna, and they began to clap and smile. And so they marched forward and entered the mouth of the gigantic serpent.
All right, you can begin your sessions, Krishna Kishore. I don't know where the time goes, it goes so fast. The whole class is so fast, I never get done what I want. So, I'll quickly give you some impressions. My impressions are mostly intended to help you to do these better. Someone commented that in their reports that the talking seems kind of fragmentary. Someone gives a little piece as far as in terms of grasping the whole Leela, someone else gives a little piece. So there was a sense of incompleteness. One thing you might do, if your group feels like that it's they're nice little fragments, but it's incomplete, someone could be chosen maybe at the end of the circle to try to put together the pieces like in a mosaic and sum up what your group kind of said. So if you get more of a sense of completion. I wouldn't say that's a hard and fast rule. If you like the way it's going with pieces, and you all assume to know what the Leela is, that you don't have to do that. But if there is a feeling of incompleteness, someone could wrap it up like that. A couple of groups weren't using the method of each one going around, and at least you should be aware of everyone in the group and they let them speak. One thing I felt, there was a lot of discussion about full faith in Krishna, because the boys had full faith in Krishna going into Agasura. It occurred to me that we also need faith in the Krishna book to go ahead and discuss this with open hearts and full minds and conviction. And faith in the association of devotees, not thinking, what's the sense or use of listening to this person? So faith is so important, not something to be ashamed of, but you should just, if you feel any wavering, then put your faith there, just like the boys put their faith. Put your faith in this process of hearing and chanting Krishna book. One person shouldn't talk too long because we have limited pastimes. I heard devotee beginning his sentences that what struck me, and that seems like a good springboard to get into things, you know, what I felt or what I thought, what struck me. So we know that this is a personal response to the reading. And we should care what strikes another... I wrote, why should I care what strikes another devotee when he hears this? We should care because he's my godbrother or she's my godsister. I care what they think. And also because I can gain for myself enlightenment by hearing. It's good to pay attention in writing, this is true, and also in hearing, details. So when you speak, if you speak of particular words that we use, that's good. A specific hearing is good. Someone was saying, I noticed that the boys entered the mouth happily. Not just that they entered, but they entered happily. And then he kind of unpack that word and express more. So attention to detail is nice. I heard allegories coming very freely, and there were solid allegories. That's a good sign that we're really becoming like realized scholars. Vishwanath Chakravarti and company, they're always making allegories of these things. So someone was saying Agasura is like death for everyone, and we have to enter death with such faith. And not just talking about it, but entering into the happy spirit. One devotee was saying how happy this scene is with the way it's even painted. The boys are not just going because Krishna said so, but they're very blissful. And as he said it, he was happy, and the devotees hearing it could get infected by that happiness. So the spirit or the mood to pick up on it is very essential in this kind of talking, and everyone will enjoy it. Think of who you might think of who you might want to do this with. I wrote down outside of this group. All it takes is one other person. Anytime you can sit down and do this. Candid expressions are good. Not canned, but candid. Don't be. This is a very important thing for me in my participation. This when I do. Don't be afraid to admit a little doubt. Even we're not supposed to have any doubts. But I may have a doubt, so I don't want to start spewing atheistic talk. But I'm a devotee, but I may have a little doubt. So sometimes if you do this, if you admit some kind of thing that isn't proper, but still it was there with you while the reading was going on, why should you say it? Not to appear foolish, not to bring the group down, but to be honest. And if you do that, sometimes you get an instant reward when you're honest, that suddenly then your intelligence reveals to you something deeper to say, but you have to say that, you have to be a little candid. So, of course, the more you have trust in the groups, you'll be able to really say what you're thinking, not just you thinking, well, okay, it's my turn, I'll say something clever. But don't be afraid to be foolish, and then you'll find that you'll be able to get past that and say something better than you thought you could. Okay, homework. I mentioned how dramatic skits and art are done on Krishna Leela. So here are the questions is, from your experience, give a specific or general example of what you consider to be a presentation of Krishna Leela that was in poor taste. A dramatic presentation. No, this can refer to drama, art, or a lecture, or narration. Some kind of presentation that you saw of Krishna Leela, like from the Krishna book, and you thought it was in poor taste. Relate what it was. You say, well, one time I saw a play and such, and the person did this, or I saw a painting and it was like this. So we can understand this inappropriate presentation of Krishna Leela as you experienced it according to your taste. Yeah, try to make it shorter. Give a specific example of what you considered poor taste in a presentation of Krishna Leela. Poor taste. Poor, bad taste.
This could be like pictures of the Krishna book.
Yeah. And then say why it hit you that way. And then the other question is just the opposite. Give an example of what you consider to be a very suitable presentation of some Krishna Leela. And how it touched you favorably. What you liked about it. What it did to you. Prabhupada says that just because it's Krishna and we can say Krishna is absolute, that doesn't mean any presentation is good. But milk touched by the lips of a serpent causes poisonous effects. So these are like asking for some examples of good and not so good presentations. Jai, thank you very much. All glories to Prabhupada.